We interrupt your regularly scheduled podcast to bring you Listen, Watch, Discuss. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome back to Listen, Watch, Discuss. As always, I'm your host, Brent Aiken, and on today's episode, I will be reviewing Nirvana's album In Utero. Now, if you'll recall from last week's episode, I mentioned that I wasn't quite sure what I was going to review this week. I didn't really have anything planned, and I figured, well, I don't have a music review planned for this month, why not review an album? And then I thought, oh, hey, the 30th anniversary of In Utero is coming up, if I'm not mistaken. And then I looked it up just to make sure, and I'm like, oh yeah. And technically, it was yesterday, the 30th anniversary, and I would have recorded the episode yesterday, but I decided just to keep on track with, you know, releasing them on Fridays. I'm like, well, it's just a day off. It's close. It's just a day off from the actual 30th anniversary. But yeah, the In Utero turned 30 yesterday. And I figured, since I reviewed Nevermind for its 30th anniversary, their second album, 2 years ago, I figured why not review their last album. So, but yes, I have talked about Nirvana. I have done an album review of Nirvana, you know, one of their albums. I reviewed Nevermind in September of 2021, when that album turned 30. And I'll briefly, you know, I talked about the history of the band and stuff. I'll briefly go over that here in case you either don't know it or haven't listened to that episode. So if you haven't listened to that episode, don't know their history, here's the gist of it. So the band was formed by Kurt Cobain, who was the frontman, lead singer, and guitarist, and his friend Chris Novoselic, who was the bassist. And, you know, it was them and a rotating roster of drummers for a while. And they formed it in, they were technically a band in 85, but they didn't form Nirvana until 87. Between 85 and 87, they were, you know, going under different names, you know, but they didn't really form Nirvana until 87. So, you know, between 87 and 1990, they had a rotating roster of drummers until... I believe it was the fall of 1990, but it was sometime in 1990, before they started recording Nevermind, when they hired Dave Grohl, who became their last, you know, and most permanent, longest lasting drummer. And then, you know, they recorded Nevermind, with him, and then, you know, that album blew up. In fact, it's like their most popular, most mainstream album. Like if you were to, like, you know, and the album cover is so iconic, like if you were to see that without, you know, seeing the name of the album or the band underneath at the bottom, you could, most people would instantly be able to recognize where that image came from. Cause it's, you know, it's just, I mean, it's so iconic, you know, but you know, it's the naked baby swimming in a pool, chasing after a dollar, like swimming after a dollar bill on a hook and line in a pool. Just like reaching out for it, you know, looking at it, you know, it's just, I know I keep repeating this. It's so iconic, you know? And, but yeah, I mean, I got into Nirvana in, I guess it was 2020. Yeah, it was 2020 because, I remember, DC was having their DC Fandome event where they were releasing trailers for their movies and shows and video games coming up. And I was looking forward to the Batman trailer. And I was like, you know, I was sitting at home. It was like the afternoon, evening, and I was like, I was looking on YouTube. I'm like, oh shit, they released the first trailer for the Batman. And this was before they moved the date, but it was originally supposed to come out in 2021, like October of 2021. So the first trailer came out in August of 2020 when the DC Fandome event was happening. And I remember I was like, man, I love this trailer. I was like, what was that song that played in there? And then I looked it up. I'm like, oh, it's Nirvana's Something in the Way. And then I listened to it again. And from there on, I was hooked on Nirvana. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, I think I've heard Smells Like Teen Spirit before, and I'm pretty sure I've heard this song. But then I actually started listening. I listened to the entirety of Nevermind all the way through. Then I went with In Utero, and I was like, wow, this is a very different sound. And then I went to their first album, Bleach, and I think I've heard every other song from their, like, compilation album, Incesticide, and, like, some of the box sets, you know, they've done. Some of the demos and stuff, other songs that weren't on the three main, you know, studio albums, but, you know, it was, you know, I've been a fan of them for 3 years now, a little over 3 years. And, yeah, I mean, I've got, I've even got a Nirvana t-shirt hanging in my closet. but yeah, they're great. And it sucks I'll never get to see them, but I am really hoping to go see Foo Fighters one day. I love them. They're my fourth favorite band. Nirvana's my second favorite. If I had to, my third would be Red Hot Chili Peppers if I had to pick one. But or I mean, yeah, in my top five, yeah, Chili Peppers are right in between Nirvana and Foo Fighters for me. But yeah, so you know, and things were going, you know, they were at the top of their fame. In Utero was a big success, and then in '94 they disbanded after Kurt Cobain committed suicide. He was found 5 days later. I mean, not 5 days. He was found 3 days later. He died on April 5th, but they didn't find him until 3 days later when an electrician, you know, came to do some, you know, fix some wiring in the house, or in his house. But yeah, so he died on April 5th, but no one found him until April 8th. And then, you know, that's when, you know, after that, Chris kind of just retired from music, and Dave decided to form his own band. And, you know, and then that's when Foo Fighters came about. In '95, he released the Foo Fighters' debut album, which at the time was just him. It was all him. He did the guitar, he played the guitar, he played the drums, and he did the vocals. So, like, you know, and it's very raw and very heavy hitting. Like, it sounds like, but it also has some mellow, softer sounds in there mixed in too. And to me, honestly, that album, I love that. It's like my fifth favorite Foo Fighters album. To me, it reminds me of, it sounds like something Kurt would have done. Like, all the songs on there sound like something that Kurt would have included on Nevermind or In Utero or their potential fourth album. You know, if they ever did get to make a fourth album, this kind of sounds like some of the songs that would have been on that album. It sounds like the evolution in a way of Nirvana. And then, of course, you know, they kind of went not more commercial rock, but they went not quite as heavy hitting, you know, not quite as raw sounding with later albums, but they still are heavy hitting, you know, Foo Fighters, but like they sounded more polished, more cleaned up, you know, the mixing and the instrumentation and the vocals in a way, you know. But yeah, so and I believe I mentioned all this in my Foo Fighters album reviews too, which I've reviewed three of them. So I guess this is like the fifth time I've mentioned all this, but but for those of you who haven't listened to those reviews or haven't listened to them in a while, then you know, this is a nice catch up. This is a nice refresher. So but yeah, so but In Utero, going back to that, yes, it was their third and final album. It was released yesterday, 30 years ago, September 21st, 1993, by DGC Records. And they, you know, everyone loved Nevermind, and Kurt liked it too, but you know, they were all proud of the, you know, and of the work that they did with that album. But he wanted to, Kurt and the others wanted to, especially Kurt, but Dave and Chris too, they all wanted to kind of go back to a more complex, abrasive sound. And with, you know, similar to their first album, Bleach. So they hired Steve Albini to produce the album. And, you know, and a lot of the songs on the album are very personal. They contain heavy allusions to his what was going on in Kurt's life at the time, and the struggles he was going through, and feelings of angst. Even though he claims that the album was very impersonal, it, you know, there, you it kind of does seem personal in a way, you know. But but yeah, it was recorded over only 2 weeks in February of '93 at Pachyderm Studio in Cannon Falls, Minnesota. So, and there were even rumors going around that DGC might not release the album due to Steve's abrasive and uncommercial sound. But everyone loved it. I mean, it was a major commercial and critical success. Critics loved the, like I said, the raw sound, like the raw, almost unproduced. I mean, not unproduced, but the raw, crispy, crunchy sound, if that makes sense. You know, like the, yeah, unconventional, you know, and Cobain's lyricism. It reached number one on the US Billboard 200 and UK Albums Chart. And Heart-Shaped Box and All Apologies, two of the singles released. Oh, Rape Me, I think, was also released as a single. They did well. And Penny Royalty was supposed to be released in April of '94, but of course they canceled that. I think they were even supposed to release a music video for that, if I'm not mistaken, or record one. But Kurt had passed before they had time to release it, so they didn't end up releasing it until way later. But yeah, so with all that being said, oh, and I love the album cover for this album too. It's basically Kurt was really obsessed with anatomy and female anatomy, especially. So the album cover is like the background kind of looks like a desert, like, you know how you like see cracks formed in the sand and the dirt. It kind of looks like that, and then like, but it like the further it gets to the middle of the album cover, it starts to become brighter, like, you know, to where you can't really see the cracks in the background. And then in the name of the band's at the top, the album, the name of the album's at the bottom, and then in the middle you have a skinned female angel just like with her hands out, almost looks like she's shrugging, and like she's like looking down at the ground, kind of, or looking off to something on the ground, like to the right of her, or to the left of her. And it's a cool album cover, and I've said, you know, and it's iconic too, you know, because like I've seen people get tattoos and all that of the album cover. It looks really cool. If I ever get a tattoo, I don't know, I'd like to get that one. It's kind of cool, but I say that and it's like, well, because it's, you know, it's kind of hard to decide what you want for a tattoo. And then when you have it, it's like, well, shit, I've got this. Of course, there's tattoo removal surgery, but then that's not cheap. And then it's like, well, that defeats the purpose of me getting that tattoo if I'm just going to remove it. Anyway, slight tangent. But yeah, so with that being said, let's move on to the album. So, dissecting it, going over each track. So there's 12 songs, 12 tracks on the album, and it's slightly shorter. It's like 8 minutes shorter than their previous album, clocking in at 41 minutes and 23 seconds. So the album starts off with track one, Serve the Servants. And this, you know, it's basically a message to Kurt's dad, who he did not have a good relationship with. It was about the coming of age during a time, well, this is Kurt's words. It was about, the song was about coming of age during a time when you're old enough to support yourself without the aid of your parents, a theme for the 20-something-year-olds, you know. And you can hear that throughout the song. But right off the bat, this song compared to the opening song in Nevermind, Smells Like Teen Spirit, is vastly different than that song. Whereas that one was more polished and cleaned up, like vocally and you know, mixing wise, instrumentation, you know, and all that sounded crisper. You know, this is very raw and like crunchy, if that makes sense. Like, and you know, it's like very, it's more abrasive and it's more hard hitting, you know, like it's more intense in a way than not saying that It Smells Like Teen Spirit wasn't intense, but just like the mixing of the album and the vocals and just the guitar work and the drumming, it's just very, it's more abrasive and in your face and intense and loud, and I love it for that. And actually, this is my second, if I had to rank the albums, I like Bleach, but it's my third favorite. Nevermind, still my favorite, just because of all the, how many singles came from that album, and it was so iconic. And plus, I love the ending, Endless Nameless, where it's just a cacophony of noise, and just, it's like a six, I think it's almost like 7 minutes, but it's like a 6.5 minute long song of just a cacophony of noise and just like them destroying their instruments. I love it. It's so chaotic. But they would later kind of continue that with In Utero, like, you know, like the end of that, that song was like basically in a way kind of foreshadowing this album, if you think about it, because like that one was very hard-hitting and abrasive and like, what the hell is this, you know? But in a good way, you know, it's like, this is very different from the, you know, rest of the songs on this album, or it's way more abrasive and hard-hitting, and this album is very much like that song, you know. But it's like that song if the entire album was that, in a way. But there are a few songs, which I'll get on later in the album, but there are a few songs on here that are more mellow. But there are more hard-hitting, the album's more abrasive and raw-sounding than Nevermind was at all, you know. The drumming's great. Dave's drumming in this album is insane. Like, if you thought it was great in Nevermind, it's like he cranks it up to 11 in this album. It's just very in-your-face and raw and abrasive and aggressive. I know I keep using the same descriptions, the same words, but that's what it is. I mean, that's what this whole album is. And Kurt's guitar playing, the bass, you can kind of hear the bass. Again, you can hear it, it's loud, but, you know, the guitar work and drumming is so much louder it kind of sticks out a little bit more than the bass. Not to just put any disrespect on Chris, but it just, you know, it's a little bit more, it's not as noticeable, if that makes sense, at least upon first listen, you know. But yeah, so lyrics are great. Teenage angst has paid off well. Now I'm bored and old. As my bones grew, they hurt. They did hurt. They hurt really bad. I love this line. I tried hard to have a father, but instead I had a dad. I love that because it's basically him in a way saying that, because with the way I see it, and again, you could interpret a lot of these lyrics any way you want. I'm sure Kurt had his own interpretation, but I'm sure he wanted to keep them kind of vague enough to where anyone could get anything they wanted to out of the song. You know, but there is probably a way that he interpreted a lot of these lyrics. But then again, he often admitted that a lot of the lyrics were just, oh, I thought they sounded cool, so I put them in the song, you know. But I'm sure some of the songs were more personal than others, like this one. But the way I interpret that line specifically, I tried hard to have a father, but instead I had a dad. The way I view that line is a father is more, the word is more formal. So I like to think of a father as someone who's there that you can rely on, that you can count on, but instead he had a dad. And, you know, and not saying you can't use dad, you know, as a compliment, but the way he's using it, the way I see dad in this instance is that, like, his dad was more of a deadbeat dad, or his dad was just kind of a more of a casual parent. Like, oh yeah, he'll swing by every now and then when he, like, you know, if he needs something from you, or the type of parent that like swings by when they think they can gain something from their son or daughter, you know, or something like that. You know, that's the way I kind of view that. So like the father sounds more like I'll be there, and then the dad sounds more like, oh yeah, I'll be there when it's convenient for me, or if I need to get something out of you, you know. If I can gain something from you in any way, you know, but yeah, great raw hard hitting song to start the album off with, and the next track is track two, Scentless Apprentice, and if that first song was hard hitting, this one is like quadruple the amount of hard hit. It's way more hard hitting than that album, like quadruple times the amount of hard hitting that one was, because yeah, just, it's very, yeah, it, I mean, I love the song. The chorus is insane. Like Kurt's, you know, cause Kurt has a tendency to, you know, he has tendencies of, to scream a lot on the albums. You know, there are instances where, you know, he kind of screams the chorus, but this is probably the most extreme. Well, the second to last song on the album and this are probably, especially not just in this album, but in the entirety of their career, the song and Tourette's are probably the most extreme I've heard Kurt's vocals. Like they're the loudest, most scratchy, you know, most visceral sounding screams that I've heard from Kurt. And when I heard this song for the first time, when I was listening to the album for the first time, I was like, Jesus Christ, like that, he can scream his ass off. That's something him, Dave Grohl and Courtney Love, his wife, from the band Hole. That's something all three of them have in common. I just think it's funny, like listening to all of their music, I'm like, they all three can scream the shit out of their lyrics. I mean, they can all sing like very mellow and very calm, but then there are instances where some songs you're listening to, especially in the choruses of some of their songs, where they scream and belt the lyrics out, and it's like, damn, you guys can scream with the best of them. but yeah, vocally, all three, lyrically, I think all three bands are really good. I mean, I like Hole, mostly their middle two albums, but they all sing really great. And, but you know, the chorus is, hey, away, go away, go away. And just the visceral screaming, you know, Kurt's, you know, belting, almost like his voice is going to give out at the end of each chorus. You know, is like very, you know, it seems like you could tell like he was really pissed off. It seems like when he was recording that song, because of how angry he gets in the chorus when he's screaming that. And, I love it. The lyrics, again, you could interpret them anyway. I'm not sure how to interpret some of these, but, like the second verse, the line, every wet nurse refused to feed him, electrolytes smell like semen. You know, it's like, what does that mean? There's a cool, very crunchy, you know, very raw sounding guitar solo in this song. It's very great. I love the line in the third verse, "You can't fire me because I quit. Throw me in the fire and I won't throw a fit." And then the chorus is, "Hey, away," and then "go away" repeated like five times. And then it ends with like the instruments kind of like almost sounds like they're like running out of like energy, and like just the guitar like, you know, like vibrating like the reverb, you know. And then you just hear Kurt going, like that. Like he's like it's like he wanted to scream more, but his voice just gave out and all he could produce was a sound like, you know, like that. And yeah, that great visceral song. I mean, it's one of my lesser favorites on the album, but I like it just because of how batshit insane it gets. You know, and just again, the guitar playing, Dave's drumming, fantastic. And Chris's bass playing, fantastic. Now for my favorite song on the album, which was also the first single released from the album, track 3, Heart-Shaped Box. This one had a music video and everything. Music video is great. Not sure, honestly, what a lot of it means, but visually it looks cool. And this one is like the one that, of all the songs on this album, sounds the most commercial, if that makes sense. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean it sounds the most like something you would hear as a released as a single from a band. Like it sounds like the song most likely to be a single because of like the fact that the verses are way, and the chorus too. Like even though Kurt's kind of like yelling the chorus, he's not yelling it to the extent he was Scentless Apprentice or even Serve the Servants. You know, it's a little more reserved, you know, in a way, but it's still very abrasive and hard hitting. But the verses are great. I love the chorus is catchy. Music video is great. And this song is about his relationship, his tenuous kind of toxic relationship with his wife at the time, who I mentioned earlier, Courtney Love. Basically kind of a lot of people said it was referencing her vagina, the heart-shaped box. But yeah, it's basically like the first verse, you know, "She eyes me like a Pisces when I am weak. I've been locked inside your heart-shaped box for weeks. I've been drawn into your magnet tar pit trap. I wish I could eat your cancer when you turn black." And, you know, like, you know, Kurt was in a way kind of a poet, like, you know, just, you know, when you hear those lines, you can't help but just the vivid imagery that comes into your head when you think of that, like magnet tar pit trap, like that, like it's not just a tar pit, it's a magnet tar pit, like it's even more, like she's even got more of a hold on him than just a regular tar pit. It's a magnet tar pit on top of that. And then just him saying, yeah, and then the chorus, "Hey, wait, I got a new complaint, forever in debt to your priceless advice." I guess kind of like meaning that, you know, that's basically an example of something the media would expect Kurt to say, you know, because they kind of viewed him as a complainer. And yeah, he's and the "I'm forever in debt to your priceless advice" is a line allegedly that Kurt used to say in his arguments with Courtney. So that is supposed to be like one of their arguments or like kind of like sampled from one of their arguments in a way, not like taken like from an argument specifically, but I'm just saying like sounds like something that they would have said, you know, that he's like, "Oh yeah, this is kind of something sounds like something I would have said." So the Dave's drumming's great, especially in the chorus, Chris's bass playing. There's a really great guitar solo in between the chorus and the third verse, and then it just and I love the quiet loud formula that Nirvana does, you know, where the verses are usually quiet and then the chorus is loud and in your face, you know. And it's great here, but the guitar solo is great. I love the way it kind of fades out, after the chorus, you know, down, 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 and then you kind of hear like the speaker kind of like squeaking in a way, or like you kind of hear it like, you know, and then it just poof, it cuts off, like yeah, you can kind of hear the guitar, like yeah, it's but it looks, it sounds great. It's one of my favorite songs, just because, I don't know, to me it's the catchiest. Lyrically, I think it might be the best. And you got one hell of a music video for it, too. I mean, you got an anorexic Santa Claus climbing up on a cross. You've got a girl dressed in a KKK outfit trying to pick a fetus from a tree, a dead tree. It's like fetuses hanging from a dead tree, and she's trying to jump up and grab one. The band, Kurt, Dave, and Chris are playing like in the middle of this dead forest, and the sky's red, and it's like, okay, what the hell's happening? And there's a guy in a hospital with a fetus in his IV bag, and of course, there's different ways you can interpret all of that. Like I interpret the KKK girl as in like the corruption of innocence, you know, like this, you know, how the America's youth is being corrupted by, you know, by anything. But you know, when you see the KKK, that's like an extreme example. Like, and there probably are, but you know, like, you know, this poor innocent blonde little girl has been inducted into the KKK. You know, like that's like, you know, when you see a little girl, it's like, oh, the innocence of childhood. But then like you see her dressed in the KKK outfit and it's like, oh shit, like they got her, you know, like she's seems like, or, and she might not even know what she's a part of, but like they're brainwashing her into believing this hateful shit, you know? I mean, not just them, but like cults in general. And, you know, like I interpret it that way. I interpret, Santa Christ, that could be like the commercialization of Christmas, the guy that's a Jesus, the anorexic Jesus wearing the Santa hat, or the anorexic old guy that looks like Jesus wearing the Santa hat and the crows pecking at him. That could be like the commercialization of Christmas or something. You know, again, that's just spitballing. It could be anything. But yeah, love the song. It's great. And now track four, we have Rape Me. Now this is one of my favorites too, because at the time that this album came out, when Nevermind came out, Smells Like Teen Spirit blew up. Like, I believe that was the first single they released from the album, and it was everywhere. Like, MTV was playing it. You know, the music video was crazy, and the music video is great for it. But yeah, the song was played everywhere. The music video was played everywhere. Everyone loved that song to the point that Kurt got tired of performing the song. Like, he was sick of it. He's like, look, I like this song, but I'm starting to get sick of it. I'm starting to hate it, because that's all you guys want me to play. Like, that's, like, every show, you want us to start with that song. It's like, because he felt like he had he felt like they had better songs. And while to some people that's debatable, and to me, I feel like I don't know, it's up there. I don't know if it's my favorite, but it's definitely in my top five of their songs. But you know, like they had so many good songs, it was hard to pick. I mean, you know, it's hard to pick which one is anyone's favorite. Everyone could have a different answer, you know. But he was like, I feel like I have more songs that are better that we could start the concerts off with, and I'm just sick of how overplayed this has become. So right off the bat, the song, the riff, the opening riff, and really throughout the song, but especially like in the first like 10-15 seconds, sounds like the opening riff to Smells Like Teen Spirit, but like a little more toned back, like toned down, and like volume wise, like it sounds a little bit more muffled, like, you know, and a little bit more laid back than the opening riff to Smells Like Teen Spirit. But when I listened to it the first time, I'm like, this sounds like, it sounds like that. It sounds like Smells Like Teen Spirit. So I guess in a way, I see that as Kurt, like, kind of poking fun at everyone saying, oh, we want another Smells Like Teen Spirit, or we want you to play this song more often. And that's just him like, no, I'll play what I want to play. You know, I mean, not that I'll never play it, but I've got way many more songs that I personally think are better, you know, than that one. I mean, that's, you know, how he felt, you know. But yeah, this song, Rape Me, obviously very questionable sounding title, but that was basically an anti-rape song, similar to how Polly from Nevermind was a song showcasing this story about this girl who got almost molested at a gas station when she got kidnapped after a concert. But it was written kind of from the point of view of the kidnapper and the sexual assaulter, because, or the predator, you know, because Kurt felt like if he wrote it from the point of view of the girl, people wouldn't get it. People wouldn't really grab it onto it as much as they would if it was written from a more abrasive viewpoint. Like, you know, it's like, oh yeah, this is way more, you know, he didn't think it would be as attention grabbing if he wrote it from the girl's point of view, because, well, people get kidnapped all the time. But if he wrote it from the point of view of the kidnapper, then they're like, oh yeah, this will draw more attention to this horrible thing and hopefully prevent more young girls from being kidnapped in the middle of the night, you know, or stalked or raped or beaten the shit out of, you know, like, because I'm sure that's a fear a lot of women, a lot of girls and a lot of women have, is that they can't, like, listen to headphones. They can't, like, walk anywhere at night and listen to music with headphones without, like, constantly having to look around to make sure no one's watching them, you know? Like, especially if they're, like, not in a populated area. It's like they can never, like, walk and listen to music. Like, you know, they'd have to, like, listen with one ear open, looking around all the time because they're worried someone, some asshole dude might, you know, molest them or beat the shit out of them or rob them, you know, or all three. But yeah, so this song, despite it being called Rape Me, is supposed to be an anti-rape song. That's the, so obviously Kurt's being sarcastic when in the first verse he says, rape me, my friend, rape me again. And then the chorus is, I'm not the only one. You know, like that. And, you know, when Kurt, at the time he wrote this song, statistics showed that one in every 500 people were raped. And then, you know, the basically, so Kurt's basically saying, I know there have been many other people that have been raped. We will seek retribution. We'll get our justice, damn it. And yeah, oh, and I didn't know this. I'm looking on Genius for some of these facts. Yeah, despite being written over 2 decades ago, well, now 3 at this point, but being written 3 decades ago, the lyrics' meaning still applies today. In 2012, of course, this was 11 years ago. I don't know if it's gone up any. But in 2012, 18.3% of women over 18 reported being sexually assaulted in their lifetime. Damn. Yeah, so we haven't gotten any better, have we? but anyway, not saying all men are like that. In fact, you know, sometimes it's the opposite. Sometimes women are the assaulters. And, you know, I'm not blaming women. I'm just saying sometimes it's the exact opposite, where women beat the shit out of, or, you know, beat the shit out of, or murder, or rape the guy. And people are like, that can't happen because of erections and stuff. And it's like, well, whatever, you know, like, women can, like, drug a guy and tie them down and rape them. Or if the girl is, like, stronger and the guy's weaker, because there could be a skinny, pasty guy and a really buff, strong woman that's like, you know what, I'm gonna fuck, well, you know, I'm gonna have sex with that, I'm gonna rape that guy, you know. But anyway, so I'm just saying there's exceptions to everything, you know. But obviously anti-rape for anyone, whether it's a man or a woman, you know, whether it's a woman raping a man, man raping a woman, no one deserves to be raped is the point of this song. and you know, and then verse 2 is, hate me, do it and do it again. Basically, yeah, they're not being raped, but being used. They're showing that they're not caring by saying, do it again. And it's not, and this isn't like Kurt saying, I want you to do it. He's like daring the guy to do it. He's like trying to guilt the rapist, you know, like, he's like, oh, you want to do this again? You want to do this horrible, despicable thing you did to me? Okay, fine. Just try it. Try it, see what happens, you know. We're going to get our justice, damn it, you know. and the bridge is great. And this sounds like the point of view of the rapist. The bridge, my favorite inside source, I'll kiss your open sores. I appreciate your concern. You're going to stink and burn. That wouldn't make sense. No, okay, never mind. That's from the point of view of the person, Kurt. Not that Kurt was raped, but it's from Kurt and the other people's point of view that were raped. Yeah, it's like, I'll kiss your open sores, like, after I've, you know, cut you up. I appreciate your concern. You're going to stink and burn. You know, it's like, you're going to die and burn in hell. And then the outro is Kurt screaming, you know, rape me, you know, and then backing vocals, you have, rape me, you know. And, but yeah, he repeats that 7 times. And then the guitar and drums kind of fade out. And, yeah, great song. So, yeah, let's move on. We're a third of the way done with the album, and I'm 34 minutes in. try to keep it at an hour. So the next track we have, track 4. We just talked about track 4. Track 5, the longest song name on the album, Frances Farmer Will Have Her Revenge on Seattle. This song was inspired by Seattle native Frances Farmer, an actor who was persecuted by the media due to her increasingly erratic behavior. Later, she was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. Kurt became fascinated with her after reading the biography, 1978's Shadowland, in high school. And their daughter, Kurt and Courtney's daughter, is named Frances Bean Cobain. Commonly, people think, oh, they named her after Frances Farmer, but it's well established she was actually named after Frances McKee from the band The Vaselines. So fun fact. So this is basically just kind of like talking about, it's like from her point of view in a way, or talking about her. Again, great lyrics. The chorus is catchy. I love how hard-hitting the drums are in the chorus. Like, every time Kurt says, I miss the comfort in being sad. Like, the part, comfort in being, you hear Dave going, don't, don't, don't. Like, there's just, like, extra hard-hitting. And it's very catchy. I love the lyrics. I love that line, too. It's something sad and bittersweet about that line. I miss the comfort in being sad. Because a lot of people feel that way. It's like, not saying people can't be comforting when you're happy, but like when you're sad, people have a tendency to be more, sometimes overcompensate, but like be even more comforting when you're sad. Like, especially like when people die, you know, like say a kid lost their grandmother, you know, like, you know, all his friends, the teachers, the next day, or when he gets back to school and, you know, for the next week, you know, they're all going to be like, oh man, I'm so sorry. You know, or if like your dog died, you know, everyone's going to be like, oh man, sorry to hear that. You know, like you're going to have someone comfort you. You're going to have someone comfort you, more. And when you're sad, and there's something kind of comforting about that. You know, the fact that, you know, there are people that, you know, so it's like, but when you're happy, not saying no one gives a shit, but people aren't going to smother you, you know, be around you as much and feel like they need to as much if you're happy or if you're doing well. They're like, good, you know, because they're like, well, you don't need comforting, you know, if that makes sense. But I love the line in the first verse. It's so relieving to know that you're leaving as soon as you get paid. I like that line because it's like, oh yeah, it kind of seems like, you know, someone who does only, people who only care about money. I like that. You know, it's like, oh yeah, well, I don't care about anything except my money. I love that line. It's so soothing to know that you'll sue me starting to sound the same. Seems like, you know, this may have happened to Frances before. I guess it was kind of like her saying, all of this is starting to sound the same. Or that could be the press saying that this is starting to sound the same. So, like, it's soothing to know that you'll sue me because this is in line with how you've been acting lately. it was interesting. There's a bunch of great lines. I love the line in the second verse. In the second verse, she'll come back as fire to burn all the liars, leave a blanket of ash on the ground. And I love when he says blanket because his voice, like, he gets, like, he, like, lowers it a little bit. Like, it gets more gravelly. Like, he's like, leave a blanket of ash on the ground, you know, like that. Like, it just, I don't know, he adds an extra, like, he like, deepens his voice, leave a blanket of ash on the, you know, like that. And I just love that. There's a great guitar solo in the song. I love the, love the whole song. So, it was great, catchy. And, yeah, so I guess that's pretty much it for that one. But again, you know, the chorus is kind of loud or louder, and then the verses are, you know, a little bit more reserved and laid back, typical Nirvana fashion. The next song, track 6, is Dumb, and this is one of the more laid back songs on the album, because just very, very mellow, very, you know, something like you could almost fall asleep to. Basically, you know, it's kind of talking about how ignorance is bliss in a way. Like, that's kind of like what I get from this song. And Kurt's basically saying, you know, the first verse, he's like, I'm not like them, but I can pretend. The sun is gone, but I have a light. The day is done, but I'm having fun. I think I'm dumb. And then the chorus is, or maybe just happy, think I'm just happy. And that's repeated 2 more times. You know, ignorance is bliss. You know, like, dumb people tend to be happy because people are like, oh, well, you don't quite know the situation going on here, you know, or something like that. And I love that. And yeah, just the rest of the lyrics are great too. The second verse, we'll float around and hay down on clouds, then we'll come down and have a hangover. But yeah, the song, I just love how very mellow and laid back it is. Like, there's a cello in the song. I don't know which one of them's playing the cello, but the drums are very laid back from Dave. There's a cello, beautiful sounding cello throughout the song. And then Kurt's vocals are just so like calm and relaxed. Like he's, it's almost like, and not saying that he always thought he was dumb, but it's almost like him thinking that he's dumb. He's come to the conclusion that he's fine with it. He doesn't need to know, he doesn't need to be the smartest person in the room. If he's dumb all the time or dumb on certain subjects, it's fine because he's happy being himself. I mean, he's not saying like he's completely dumb, or at least I don't feel like he's saying that he's 100% dumb, but like anyone can be dumb when it comes to anything. Like, I'm dumb when it comes to knowing how a rocket works. Like, I couldn't tell you the first thing about building a, a rocket, like the work NASA does, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm dumb. It's just I'm dumb to that specific thing. Like, I don't know how to do that, but everyone's dumb in something, because they don't know it or never have been taught it, but you shouldn't let that get you down. You should just be happy, It's fine to not know everything. His vocals, I just love the, the sun is gone, but I have a light. The day is done, but I'm having fun. It's very, it's very singable. It's like, 'cause one, everyone can reach that level of, in his voice, that register, 'cause it's just, there's no screaming in it. Like, I could never scream along to Scentless Apprentice because my voice would give out halfway through the song. But like, I love singing along to this song just because of how laid back it is, and how catchy it is. And then the outro is him repeating, "I think I'm dumb," like 12 times. But yeah, so great song. I guess that's pretty much it. Good song. And now we're halfway through the album. So coming up on track 7, we have Very Ape. This one's a really good one. Probably my sixth favorite, if I had to pick. Yeah, probably right at six. This one's very, yeah. This is, one where they're incorporating soft verses and very loud, rough hooks. And and fun fact: this song was one of the few songs recorded with all of them playing their instruments together. With all instruments playing together on any, like all of them playing at the same time, I guess. I feel like, yeah. So, again, lyrics are kind of up to interpretation with this one. Some of the lyrics are more random sounding than some of the ones, on the first half of the album. But the first verse has some funny lines and interesting lines in the lyrics. I take pride as the king of alliterature. I'm very ape and very nice, which that could actually be a reference to dumb, just maybe more insulting wise to, Kurt's intelligence, like, or Kurt, if that's him saying I'm very ape and very nice. I mean, that is him singing it, but if that's him referring to himself, because I'm very ape and very nice, that could be him saying, kind of referencing back to dumb when he's like, I think I'm dumb, but maybe just happy. But here it's like, I'm very ape, but I am very nice. It could be like, because apes are not saying they're all dumb, but like, it's like, oh, we're smarter than them because we're more evolved, we're higher up on the evolutionary chart, It's like, we're smarter than them because we can like think and talk. I mean, they can think and communicate, but you know what I mean? We can actually verbally speak. And we stand on two legs and, and all that. But, and we build rockets and stuff. We build cars and everything. But yeah, so, it could be like him saying, like, oh, people might see me as an animal, but I'm very nice. Like, I'm a dumb ape, but I'm not very nice. I love the second verse. Yeah, I think the second verse is my favorite. If you ever need anything, please don't hesitate to ask someone else first. I'm too busy acting like I'm not naive. I've seen it all. I was here first. But yeah, just the verses are very catchy. It just flows. The song flows so well, and it's, I kind of wish it was like a minute longer because it's just under 2 minutes. It's a minute and 56 seconds. I'd really love if this song was just a little bit longer, but yeah, I mean, I guess that's my only nitpick with this song is that it's a little too short, but on the one hand, I like that it's short and sweet and to the point, you know? And then of course, Out of the Ground Into the Sky is the chorus. Song's catchy. I love how it just abruptly ends after Kurt, you know, repeats the chorus Out of the Ground Into the Sky like four times and the Into the Dirt, don't do. And then that's it. And then, so pretty much it. Now track eight, we have Milk It. And this was, this one is one of the more, strange songs on the albums, or on the album, because we have this like instrumental intro where like, it kind of reminds me of Endless Nameless, where like all the instruments are kind of like off sync, like they're all playing at different times in a way, and they're all like not half-assing it, but they're all kind of just like, you know, very laid in a laid-back attitude, playing their, you know, more laid-back way of playing their instruments, and it's just very like off-key in a way, like and just very like down, like the way like Kurt's strumming his guitar and the way Dave's drumming. Is like very kind of, you know, it sounds like something's amiss. Like it's a little bit off key. They're all kind of playing. It seems like they're all playing a different song. but I mean, I love it. It's like, it's very interesting way to start the song off. And then I think this is some of Kurt's quietest vocals on this song because it's almost like he's whispering them. Like in the first verse, he's like, I am my own parasite. I don't need a host to live. We feed off of each other. We can share our endorphins. And then just the, like, the, and then as soon as the verse finishes, like each verse, the instruments just, you know, crank up to 11. Guitar starts blasting. Dave starts blasting the drums. Chris is on the bass. And then, you know, get the pre-chorus, you know, and then the chorus, Kurt starts screaming his ass off. And again, some of the lyrics are up to interpretation. Like, I don't know what him screaming doll steak and test meat is supposed to mean. But, and then in the chorus, he says, look on the bright side, suicide, lost eyesight, I'm on your side. Angel left wing, right wing, broken wing, lack of iron and or sleeping. And then the second verse, he says, I own my own pet. And then, you know, and then we go back to the quieter, off key, weird sounding instrumentation, you know, them like laid back playing of their instruments. And he's like, I own my own pet virus. I get to pet and name her. Her milk is my shit. My shit is her milk. And then we get an instrumental break in the middle. And then, you know, we get the chorus and then we get the outro, which is him screaming his ass off. And the outro is very random, but I love it just because I'm like, what the hell is he trying to say here? The outro is him screaming, protector of the kennel, ectoplasma, ectoskeletal, obituary birthday, your scent is still here in my place of recovery. I feel like maybe obituary birthday is like someone died on their birthday, and then your scent is still here in my place of recovery could mean like I'm trying to better myself without your presence, and I still like, I can still smell you, I can still sense your presence even though you're not here. I feel like the song's probably, again, could just be up to interpretation. It could be pretty much anything Kurt wanted it to be, but I do love how it's, very quiet during the verses. And then like, it's the most extreme example of the quiet, loud formula on this album. And, it's like the very quiet verses and the very loud chorus. I guess in a way, yeah, it's kind of discussing Kurt's frustration with fame and his addiction to heroin and drugs. And it also contains some of Kurt's suicidal thoughts, but Kurt even cited this track as an example of the more experimental and aggressive direction the band's music had been moving in the months prior to, them recording it. So I thought that was cool. So track nine, two-thirds of the way done with the album. We're now in the home stretch. Track nine, we have Penny Royalty. Now, this was supposed to be the third single released from the album, but after Cobain died, you know, they were going to release it in April, but when he died, the planned release was, you know, pushed back or was abandoned. But the song did get plenty of airtime on MTV and a lot of attention due to Kurt's solo rendition on their live Unplugged album in New York, the MTV Unplugged album, which a lot of artists do, which if you don't know what the Unplugged albums are, they're basically when bands perform live. They basically perform a concert, but it's a live acoustic version of like some of their harder rock songs that they play. So like, you know, it's kind of like a more stripped down versions of their songs, like more personal stripped down versions, if that makes sense. So, but yeah, if you haven't listened to their Unplugged album, it's great too. It's pretty much got songs from all three of their albums. Only one from Bleach, though. I was kind of hoping they'd put School or, you know, some of the others on there, but he's got one from Bleach and then some from Nevermind and then Utero. And then he sings that, like, that's half, a little over half the album. And then the other half are songs from other bands. He sings David Bowie's, The Man Who Sold the World, which a lot of people, that it's funny, that version's so popular, people forget that that's a David Bowie song. They're like, oh yeah, that was a David Bowie song. I forgot. But yeah, that song's great. And I think I do like, I'm not saying David Bowie's version's bad, but I think I do prefer Kurt's version. I just, because I've heard it more, and I think I heard it first, so maybe that's why. But yeah, so this song's great. It's my third favorite. If I had to rank it, it's my third favorite from the album. I love how the song starts off with Kurt, like, coughing and clearing his throat. He's like, and then he starts playing the guitar. But yeah, it's verse one is like two lines, and then it starts. He's like, "I'm on my time with everyone. I have very bad posture." And then the guitar and drums go down, 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 down. And then he's, you know, starts screaming the chorus, or starts, well, not screaming it, but like starts like more loudly singing the chorus. The sit and drink Penny Royal tay, you know, like that. And then, you know, again, quiet, loud formula throughout the entire song. But basically the song, Penny Royal Tea, if anyone's wondering what that is, it's made from some plants, squaw mint, mosquito plant, or pudding grass. That's all the same plant. Okay. But yeah, it was used by pregnant women long, long ago as a way to, it was an abortion tea. You know, they drink the tea, they were pregnant, it should distill the life inside of me, which is the second line, distill the life that's inside of me. But yeah. And then this line, I love the, I love the line in the second chorus. I'm so tired and I can't sleep. I'm a liar and a thief. And you know, that was kind of like, I guess that was Kurt in a way saying that that Kurt was, I guess Kurt could, like, felt like he was cheating all of his fans and getting rich off being this big rock star when he didn't really like all the fame and attention he was getting, you know. So that could be him saying I'm a liar and a thief because he was gathering all this people, these people's attentions, but he didn't really like the huge, he didn't really like that they were that successful, you know. He preferred when it was kind of just, they were a little bit more underground and were, you know, kind of like their Bleach days, you know. The guitar solo is great, very crunchy, very loud. I think it might be my favorite, like, solo on the album, from Kurt. But, I love the third verse. I'm on warm milk and laxatives, cherry flavored antacids. And then, you know, the chorus comes back. And then we get the outro. Basically that line, the third verse is referring to Kurt struggled with chronic stomach pains his entire life, caused by scoliosis, which you know, that was referenced earlier in the first verse of the song when he says, I have very bad posture. And he basically, that's what he meant when he said, I'm on more milk and laxatives. Like, if people ask, what are you on? You know, like, that's usually like, what drug are you on? You know, if someone says, what are you on? So he's basically, he took warm milk and antacids to fix it. But yeah, so, oh, and he was also talking, he was taking an extremely unusual and highly addictive solution, heroin, which causes constipation, which explains why he also was on laxatives. That's why he was on warm milk, laxatives, and antacids. But yeah, great song, third favorite. And this next one, number 10, is my second favorite, right behind, squeezed in right between Penny Royalty and Heart-Shaped Box. This is my second favorite. I love, it's a little bit more, I guess it's a little bit more of a controlled chaos than, you know, Tourette's, Milk It, or Sinless Apprentice, but I do love how chaotic this song gets, and it's just, it flows so well, and it's so catchy, like, just how seamlessly Kurt, you know, and Kurt's singing, and guitar playing, and Chris's bass playing, and the Dave's drumming, how it all just, like, flows so well in this song. But yeah, this, you know, has this very rough instrumentation in the beginning, where, like, it's like, it sounds like they're almost tuning their instruments, and, like, it's like there's a very squeaky speaker sound in the background, you know, and yeah, it's just, it's very interesting way to start the album off with, or start the song off with, and yeah, it's a great build up to the first verse, but yeah, you know, it builds up, and then we get, you know, very hard hitting guitar and a very loud guitar playing, bass playing, and drumming, and then we hear the and then it kind of calms down a little bit to, you know, when we get to the verse, and again, I love the lyrics throughout. The first verse has some use just once and destroy, invasion of our privacy, afterbirth of a nation, starve without your skeleton key. That line could probably be referencing the fact that some people, you know, like, a skeleton key is like it could be like a key to a bunker, and like, oh yeah, only the rich and privileged get, you know, get access to, like, you know, the best life can afford. And it's like where the poorer people and middle class people kind of have a tendency more to suffer. So that could be like saying, oh yeah, you're going to starve without your skeleton key to the bunker, you know, cause like, oh yeah, only the rich people have access to the bunker or have access to the best. And you guys going to get the shit end of the deal, you know? I love the line in the pre-chorus, I love you for what I am not. I do not want what I have got. You know, that's very poetic sounding. Like, like, everything I love about you is everything that I'm not, you know? And then the chorus is catchy. And again, quiet, loud, quiet formula. The chorus is very loud, hard hitting, you know, more raw, more abrasive. And then, yeah, the chorus is what I need? What is wrong with me? What is what I need? And again, and then, like, second verse, you know, some lines are starting to be like, okay, is this up to this is more up to interpretation, some of these. Like, and I love how this doesn't even rhyme. I just really, yeah. The second verse, none of the lines rhyme at all, but nothing to do with what you think, if you ever think at all. Bipolar opposites attract, all of a sudden my water broke. I was like, wait, what? The song is great, has a great guitar solo, and then I just love how we get instrumental outro, or we get the outro where, you know, again, Dave's drum playing, Kurt's bass playing, Chris's guitar playing, I mean, Kurt's guitar playing, Chris's bass playing, Dave's drumming, just, you know, they're going off the charts, they're cranking it up to 11, and it's just very raw and unpolished, and it sounds great. It's just very controlled sounding chaos in a way. It's more controlled chaos than like Sinless Apprentice in a way, you know. But it's still chaos in a way. And I love it for that. Let's see. And yeah, coming up on track 11, we have Tourette's, last two songs of the album. So Tourette's, track 11, is... I like it, but it's my least favorite on the album, and I think it might be because it's only a minute and a half, or it's like a minute and 36 minutes, a minute and 36 seconds. So it doesn't really leave, I mean, it leaves an impression, but it's, to me, it's a little too short to really do a whole lot for me. You know what I mean? Like where I get a lot out of it. That being said, I do love how just batshit insane it is, because pretty much the entire song is Kurt screaming. Like there's no mellow part to it at all. It's just, I mean, I guess the mellow part, you hear like in the beginning of the song, like speakers, not malfunctioning, speakers, like feedback from the speakers, you know, kind of, you know, and distortion. And you hear Kurt say, moderate rock, like that, like, but that's like the only part where he's like, says anything with a more toned down voice. Like every thing in the song is him screaming his ass off. And I do love it for that. And just because how chaotic the instrumentation is throughout this entire, it's just a minute and a half of them, you know, going off, like going as hard as they can. And I love it for that, you know, but it's still just my least favorite just because it's the shortest, and it would have been cool if it was a little bit longer. And also because, like, you know, yeah, it just, it didn't do a whole lot for me just because of how short it was, I guess. Maybe that's the reason. But, also I do think it's funny too, because every time I listen to this song, some songs I'm like, what's Kurt saying here? Because sometimes his vocals are so reserved and so quiet, but this one is like, he's screaming so loudly, I don't know what the hell he's saying. I hear it differently every time, his lyrics. I'm like, okay, I think I get, no, wait, no, now I hear something, you know, now I hear something else, you know. But apparently in the first verse he says, Mayday every day, Mayday, could have had a heart attack, my heart, we don't know anything, my heart, we all want something fair, my heart. And then the chorus is him going, hey, 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 you know, like that. I love that too, though, in the chorus when he says, hey, and then we get that down, 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 like a little bit of a guitar break for like two, three seconds. And then, hey, down, 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 you know, like that. And then of course, verse two, out of town, out of sight is my heart. Queen of lies, not today, my heart. One more on the phone, my heart. One more at the door of my heart. And again, this song, again, open to a hell of a lot of interpretation. Also, the word Tourette's is not in the song at all, so I'm not sure why it's called Tourette's, but I think it's funny, like, that word is nowhere in the song at all, and yet that's the name of the song. Maybe hey, him screaming hey is supposed to be Tourette's, like that's the verbal tick, hey, you know, like, I don't know. But then the outro is mean heart, and then Kurt repeating cold heart like seven times before he kind of just like this weird vocal noise with his mouth. And then again, kind of the feedback coming from the guitar is like, you know, like squeaking and shit. But yeah, so yeah, not a bad song. I mean, I like all 12 songs. It's just my least favorite. But and track 12, we have the final track, All Apologies. This was the, along with Rape Me, or well, All Apologies and Rape Me were released, I guess, side by side, but they were the, I guess, technically second, I mean, they're two songs, but they were released together, so I guess technically you could say it was the second single, but they were both released as the second single, after Heart-Shaped Box. That was released on August 30th, 1993, but, you know, about a month before the whole album came out, and then All Apologies and Rape Me were released on December 6th of 1993. So, and this was the song that, I believe this was the song that Kurt ended their MTV Unplugged performance with. I may be mistaken, but if not, it was towards the end of that album, so, or of that performance. And, you know, and the way, and the song, Kurt's, really, in the song, he's apologizing for how he behaves, in a way he summarized as peaceful, happy, comfort. And he went on to dedicate it to his wife, Courtney, and their daughter, Frances Bean. And also, like with Dumb, this is another one of my favorites on the album. This one is, or well, actually, I don't know where I'd put it. Well, it's probably at number 8. I know that's kind of low. Again, like, I love all the songs. This would probably be at 8 just because of, how many songs I like a little bit better than this one, but this is a really great one, and it's a great closer to for the album just because of the way it ends. But like with Dumb, this song has a cello in it. It's the second song and second and last song to have a cello on it, and cello, just like Dumb, sounds great. You know, in the chorus, we have some, or, you know, in the chorus and in between the verses, you know, we have some great, raw guitar playing, from Kurt, and the drumming and the bass, you know, going, Dave and Chris playing their asses off too. And yeah, I love how calm and somber it starts off with the cello and the drums. Before we get into the first verse, and then, you know, and then in the chorus, it, you know, gets cranked up to 11. And then, I love the lyrics. What else should I be? All apologies. Like Kurt basically saying, oh, should I apologize for everything that I do? I mean, all the time, like for stuff I didn't do, you know, and then what else could I say? Everyone is gay. What else could I write? I don't have the right. What else should I be? All apologies. But yeah. Oh, and then I like the second verse, the first line in the second verse. I wish I was like you, easily amused, which that could also be a reference to him going back to Dumb. And Kurt's always felt guilty for his skeptical and cynical outlook, but he basically kind of wishing he could be as entertained as like the sheep, entertained as the rest of the masses. And yeah, this also fits with attitude of a rock star's status. He wishes he could play songs and enjoy them along with the crowd and his fans. And his fans. But yeah, so, and then of course we get, oh, and I didn't realize Dave was also singing the outro with Kurt, but okay. So we have Kurt and Dave singing the outro, which is all in all is all we are. And that's repeated like 19, 20 times. And then, you know, we have the guitar and the drums kind of slowly coming down from 11 to a one, you know, in terms of them playing them, like they kind of slowly start to, you know, fade out, or not fade out, but they slowly start to play them more and more slowly. And then, you know, it ends with just one, you know, the last line is all in all is all we are, like, you know, said a little bit more slowly. And that's when the guitar, bass, and drums kind of fade out. But yeah, I mean, you know, album started off strong and ended strong, and it's my second favorite from them. Great album, you know. Happy 30th anniversary to the album. If you haven't listened to Nirvana or this album, I feel like for a new fan, listen to Nevermind first, and if you like it, then go to In Utero and Bleach. Especially if you like if you like that last song on Nevermind, Endless Nameless, then I feel like you'll like the entirety of this album, or pretty much the entirety of this album, because this album is like Endless Nameless if it was spread out over 12 songs, you know. Because that song is very chaotic and loud, and sometimes at times hard to understand what Kurt's saying because of the way he's screaming, and just the instrumentation of it's very loud and abrasive. You can hear the speaker malfunctioning, you know, it's like, and like the feedback from the mics and shit, and it's like it's you know, chaotic and it's insane, but I love it. At first I was like, what the hell is this, you know? I was like taken aback by it, and not really hating it, but kind of confused in a way. But I was like, what the hell is this? And then the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, no, I love this song. but yeah, so if you like Nevermind, and if you especially like Endless Nameless, the final track on that album, you'll love all of In Utero. And if you have listened to it, well, I hope you enjoyed the 30th anniversary of the album yesterday. I know I sure did. I mean, I didn't have a party or anything, but I did listen to the album once or twice. And yeah, so it was great. Again, I know technically this is the day after the anniversary, but, you know, I usually record on Fridays, and I was watching my shows last night, and I was kind of tired from work. I didn't really feel like, you know, recording it, but since I'm not working on Fridays, I'm like, yeah, well, just record it in the middle of the day tomorrow. Why not? Who cares if it's a day off? You know, it's, I mentioned it in the episode, didn't I? You know, kind of like that. But, you know, so yeah, I guess that does it for today's episode. I guess when I post it, it'll be closer to tonight. It's like, at the time I'm finishing this episode, it's 4:40, but yeah, I mean, close enough today, tonight's episode, whatever. But if you enjoyed today's episode, you know, I'm glad you liked it. Next week, I don't know if I'm going to do three. That seems like a lot. I may try to do three reviews. I'm going to have at least two reviews. I'll be reviewing season one of the Adventure Time spinoff sequel series, Fiona and Cake, which I've been loving so far. Its first season is ending next week, and hopefully it gets more than one season. I hope season one isn't just the end of it. I'd like to see it go on because I'm loving it so much. And then I'll also be reviewing the new sci-fi movie starring John David Washington and from the director of Rogue One, The Creator. I've been looking forward to that ever since the first trailer came out in May. I may also do like a 10-year anniversary of Breaking Bad, like a review of that, like to celebrate the fact it's been 10 years since it ended. That may be Sunday, that may be Saturday, but the Fiona and Cake review will be up Friday. The Creator will probably be Saturday, and then I may try to squeeze in a Breaking Bad review in Friday. But if not, just know I'll do Fiona and Cake and The Creator. So those two are definitely coming up. May have Breaking Bad review coming up. Who knows? So look forward to them. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Hope you have a great weekend. And until then, I'll see you next Friday. Or I'll see you next Friday. And until then, take care.